Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Backchat. I'm Susie. This is our regular slot where Claire and I discuss the backstory. This week, we're talking about Norman Lamb, The Personal and Political, which is Season 1, Episode 1. So this week you spoke to Norman Lamb, Susie, our first semi-famous contributor. We leapt at the opportunity to interview Norman, didn't we? Because he has spoken quite candidly about stuff that's gone on in his life, and we wondered if his backstory had influenced his politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he came out with this great line that, well, I have a feeling he might have said before.
Are you suggesting that a politician...
he said that his personal has informed but not formed his policies.
Yeah.
Seemed pretty true.
I think the interest was already there, wasn't it? But clearly the experiences that he's had have kind of given that depth of understanding, maybe.
Yeah, so Susie, were you surprised that Norman chose to talk about his sister's suicide?
Yeah, I really was. It caught me slightly on the back foot, I have to say, but I felt that he obviously had decided that it was something that he wanted to talk about, and that there was value in opening up about something that's so personal to him and his family. And I was really interested in his comments around looking at what we know from research and applying that evidence. I thought that was a really strong message, and he certainly seems to be kind of pioneering that work and pushing forward that agenda.
Yeah, I was really pleased to hear that he was doing that, because I recently met with two people who've lost relatives to suicide for an episode in season 3.
Yeah.
And I think they'll be really pleased to hear about that as well. They've both got very different stories, but I think losing someone through suicide is just really complex. And so it's particularly hard loss. And there's a real need for people to kind of get support from other people who...
Yeah, people who have experienced that themselves. Yeah, absolutely. That comes across really clearly.
And it was really interesting to hear about Norman's son, Archie, and the similarity to Natasha from season 1, in that the intrusive thoughts, that fear that you'll do something like bad sort of thing.
I thought it was fascinating that the expert said that it's almost those people who are least likely to do something bad who are most at risk, that those people that are sort of very empathic, perhaps, worry that they're going to hurt somebody.
Yeah, it's like an overblown empathy, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Norman talked about it being an overblown conscience sort of thing.
Like, yeah.
And actually, yeah, you can sort of see that in the characters that you know might have had this.
Yeah,
sort of
completely.
So, yeah,
I was reading, I've finished John Ronson's book about psychopaths recently. And the reason that I mention it is because in that, one of the experts says that if you're reading the book and you're worrying that you have some of those psychopathic traits and that perhaps you are a psychopath, then you're not, basically.
Were you worrying that you were a
psychopath? Yeah, completely.
This is Susie. He thinks that she has every mental health illness that we've had on the programme, on the series.
And I also definitely have hypochondria.
What is it when you've got mental hypochondria?
I don't know.
But we both
I don't
that.
Know, but there, yeah. there needs to be a word for that, definitely. Answers on a postcard.
Yeah.
No, but there is a similarity there, isn't it? Isn't there? You know, that kind of that worry that, again, it's that thing of seeing something that is a personal trait recognizing that trait in yourself, but actually, you know, with somebody like a psychopath or other disorders, it's there in an exaggerated form, isn't it?
I was also really interested in that there was obviously two sons and that awareness that the other sibling really has a place in all of this. It's kind of really important that one isn't overshadowed or pushed to one side, isn't it? Have you ever seen that happen before?
Yeah, there was an episode. Did you listen to that episode of The Untold, you know, the Radio 4 one with Grace Dent? And they did one on anorexia.
It was an amazing
programme. And I mean, apart from some of the other things that came out, I remember here, I think she had a brother, didn't she? And just that sense of where's his place in the family and, you know, the impact of him seeing his sibling go through this, but also the impact on the whole family and how that affected him. So I think that's clearly something that we, you know, we kind of all need to be mindful of, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And so moving on to this confidence stuff, because that was very interesting as well,
definitely.
Wasn't it?
Definitely, yeah, I'm really
I really liked your
stuff.
Comment about how to replicate the confidence you get in private schools and the state system. How can we do that? Yeah, how can we do that?
Oh my God, I have absolutely no idea, but...
I mean, I my sort of gut feeling is that part of it is just sort of actually intrinsic to the fact that, you know, as soon as you turn up at like a big impressive building and your parents have paid for, you know, a whole load of money for it.
Yeah.
Well, that gives you confidence.
It's like a sense that you matter more.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're top 5% of the country. Yeah. Or, you know, your parents' income is.
Yeah. It's really difficult. And I think it's such a massive challenge because, you know, how many people are holding themselves back from doing things because they think that it's not the sort of thing that's open to them. I mean, obviously there are lots of practical reasons why people have to hold themselves back, but just that self-belief, that confidence, if we could, I'd really like to know more about this. Yeah, I think there's a School of Life course on confidence, isn't there, which I would quite like to go on. Maybe you could come on it with me and we could find out more.
Yeah, definitely. It would be like overconfident, you know, really overconfident.
Yeah, we could. Or we become those bizarre people that kind of stand in front of a mirror going, I am a unique human being, and shouting it 10 times until you believe it.
Yeah, I think maybe we're missing that course. We've been talking about confidence quite a lot.
Yeah.
And we've come up with some tips, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, three. Only three.
Only three, yeah.
Don't get excited.
So, Susie, hit me with the first tip.
Okay, tip number one is stop worrying about how you come across to everyone.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, it is easier said than done, but it's one of those things that you just do through constant practice. So when you're talking to someone and you start to think, what do they think of me? How do I look? How do I sound? Just move away from that and engage back in the conversation. And kind of bizarrely, by doing that, you maybe come across as being more confident. You come across in a better way because you're not distracted by worrying about how you're coming across.
Yeah, I like that, actually. It's just like really engaging in what you're thinking and saying. And and then actually, yeah, it's just it works without even particularly trying. So
yeah.
Tip number two. We were talking about the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Maybe you can give us a quick potted thing of what the imposter syndrome is.
Okay, thanks for that.
Being our psychological resident expert.
Absolutely. Okay, so my understanding is that it's that kind of belief that you're not really that good and you're going to be found out. And I think it's incredibly common, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've read that apparently it's more common in women in British people as opposed to Americans.
That's interesting.
So as a British woman, we're basically it would be surprising if you haven't got imposter syndrome.
Apparently
when you feel like it's coming on, if you name the sort of inner script, so like that thing that's coming into your head which is saying, I'm not up to this, I'm not actually very good at this, why am I even here, like that kind of thing, if you perhaps like name that as kind of like the judge, or okay, there's my perfectionist voice, and then have your sort of inner, like hopefully little voice that is confident, name that as your friend, as your, you know, as your inner person, and encourage that voice a lot more than this kind of, you know, overriding voice which is saying, you're crap.
Okay, so we need to encourage the voices in our heads.
Yeah, having thought that they weren't such a good thing, it turns out, yeah, we're all over them. Name them.
Yeah.
And be their friends.
Okay. Okay, the third tip is something that I think I heard from Emma Watson. And it's really simple, but I really like it. And it's if not me, then who? And if not now, then when?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of ties into that imposter syndrome. It's like if you suddenly think, oh my God, I'm not good enough to be doing that, then that little saying just kind of reminds you that, well, if I'm not good enough, then who else is good enough? You know, other people aren't sort of magically better than you.
Even though they might be projecting that.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean they are.
Yeah. And I think it maybe leads you to sort of appraise your own skills a bit more realistically.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
Yeah.
And actually, when we talked about it, it was, we thought about applying it to ourselves, like back to this podcast and to the backstory, like, if not us, then who? You know, it's a good way of kind of just thinking, because we've had times when we've had a bit of crisis of confidence, haven't
completely,
we?
Yeah. I think this isn't necessarily a tip, but just an observation. I think that, you know, one of the things that's really helped has been co-working. I would have given up on this a long time ago if I'd been doing it by myself. And I think that, you know, maybe that's just something to bear in mind, that actually surrounding yourselves with people that give you confidence is a good, you know, if somebody's sapping your confidence, that's something to be aware of, isn't
it? And doing something in a two is always more confidence.
Oh my God,
it?
Definitely.
So much.
Okay, so what are the three things that we have learned about Norman Lamb?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that he cycles in Norfolk.
That's because it's flat. It's very, very flat. It's a good place to cycle.
It is a great place to cycle.
Yeah. I think the second thing is we kind of went into this wondering whether his interest in mental health was as a result of his family experiences. And I think it isn't, is it? I mean, those experiences have, as he says, informed him. And I'm sure that they've given a greater depth to his understanding and so on. But I think that interest and that commitment were there already.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure, his empathy for other families that are going through things has only, you know, grown from what he's been through. But So the third thing is, it wasn't actually in the episode, but it was on the recording. He listens to podcasts.
He does. He likes a Radio 4 podcast. So there you go. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening. We are the Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at the Backstory Pod on Twitter.
You can really help us by liking, sharing, reviewing on Apple Podcasts and grabbing the phones of a few friends and like sign them up, especially if they're, you know, a bit older and don't know how to do it. So
yeah, people don't know what that podcast app on their phone actually does. So please grab their phone and subscribe them to the Backstory Podcast. That would be fantastic. Send us your thoughts on this or any of our previous episodes. All of season one is there if you fancy a binge listen. And we'll be back next Tuesday with a brand new backstory.
See you then.
Bye.
Thanks again to our sponsor, James, from 16 Degrees Coaching. Don't let your backstory define your future. Email him, james@16degreescoaching.com. .co.uk.